So let me start telling you briefly the plan of the talk. So the first part, I will describe some string models which have some non-supersymmetric brains. I will describe how we build these models. And then I will go to some applications of these models. The first one has to do with nonlinear supersymmetry, and the second one with the one-loop Higgs mass, computation of one-loop Higgs mass. So we want to build some string models which are non-supersymmetric. We know our world is non-supersymmetric, so this is the first motivation. And we want to bring to construct these models where we can do some explicit computation, so we can try to learn something. Okay? So if you had to break supersymmetry, then you either break it at tree level or you break it with non-perturbative effects. To be able to make some computation in these string models quantitative to tell you something, we'd like to break it at tree level. And the idea is it's described in this two pictures. Is that we would like to construct some string model where we have some non-supersymmetric brain, so where the brain is the supersymmetry is broken at the string scale, and then this supersymmetry breaking can be either mediated to the brain where we are living, which is supersymmetric, or we can use this this non-supersymmetric brain to describe the standard model, where you need to have the string scale at TV. Okay.
So in some cases, you're thinking about TV scale gravity and some not. Or?
Yeah. In this case, for the gauge hierarchy problem, you need TV scale string, and in this case, you will have this. You have two parameters: the size of the XR dimension and the string scale. So we have to fit them. So be something in the intermediate region. So I will describe how to build some scenario like this, and then I will discuss application in this second case.
What's the hidden brain for in the second case?
For nothing. I mean, it just appears
there. On the other brain.
Yeah. Can use it for dark matter.
So in your models, the string breaking scale is always in the TV?
I said if we live on the non-Susy brain, then for the problem of scale of gauge break, the hierarchy problem tells you need to put it at TV. Otherwise, it can be much higher. It's just you replace the old idea of the hidden sector where you have non-perturbative effects that break supersymmetry, you replace it with some string breaking of supersymmetry. So we would like to study this this way of breaking supersymmetry on explicitly on the D brain and see how to study the mediation to some supersymmetric brain, but there were no model where this can be studied, so where we can do this computation explicitly at string level. So this is why we went and tried to construct such a model. So the model, the starting point is that we take very simple, try to be very simple. So we start, take some segment, so S1 over Z2, a bulk, and there's two boundaries. Now, on this space, we are going to put two kind of objects, orient faults and deep brain. So I apologize for the string theorists. This will be very trivial in the beginning for them, but I mean, I want to explain these things. So we have these orient faults are sitting on the boundaries, and then we are the deep brains. Okay. So the properties we need about the orient faults. So there are, we are going to work on flat space. So we have four different kinds of orient faults. OP planes, which are differentiated by the tension, which is given by Neuville-Schwarz, which can be either positive or negative. And the Ramon-Ramon charge, which can be either positive or negative. So the Ramon-Ramon charge, the orient fold break explicitly half of supersymmetry, and the supersymmetry which is preserved or which is broken is determined by the Ramon-Ramon charge. So the two different orient fold planes preserve the two different halves of supersymmetry present in the back. Okay. So then we have D brains. We have two kinds of D brains, differentiated by the Ramon-Ramon charges. And again, the Ramon-Ramon charge tell us which half of supersymmetry is preserved. So the difference is that now the breaking is spontaneous. So the supersymmetry which is not preserved is still there, but it's non-linearly realized on the break. And you see, the Ramon-Ramon charge, when it's positive, this is what I called beta even is preserved by the D brain, but on the orient fold, it was eta even was preserved for Ramon-Ramon charge with the opposite sign. Okay.
So we started 10 dimensions.
I'm going to do type one. So now I'm using this, just defining this object, and then I will start building models. Okay? So just to summarize, I told you there are four oriental planes and two different deep brains. Okay. These are dynamical objects. Their tension has to be positive. This one can have tension negative or positive, and the two signs form a Ramon-Ramon charge. Now, the idea is to build this non-supersymmetric brain, world volume, is to take a combination of a brain and an orient fold, which do not preserve the same supersymmetry. So, if you take OP and DP, if you take the orient, this orient fold which has Ramon-Ramon charge negative, and the D brain which has Ramon-Ramon charge positive, they will preserve the same supersymmetry, and you will have half of the supersymmetry on the brain world volume. However, if you take instead this anti-orient fold of E bar, which has the same sign for Ramon-Ramon charge than the D brain, then you will break supersymmetry because they preserve different halves of supersymmetry. So we'll have a brain world volume with no supersymmetry linearly realized. Okay. This idea is not new. However, when people try to realize it, they found that when you do just you do this construction I told you, you do the OB fold, the orient fold, you have one type of orient fold plane which appear, and then when you add the D brains on it, you always get some Nivishwat.pol. So that call for the dilaton. And this you can see it here on this. Is that.
Don't they repel each other?
Sorry?
Don't they repel each other, this system?
It depends on the construction. If you do some orbifold.
So you need something extra to stop it. Yeah. If I just put them on top of each other, I think they repel, right?
If you can just put them on top of each other, you compute the one loop, you find that the brain is
going to live. Yeah, obviously, because they have the same charge. So what do you do?
You do some more complicated model with I will describe the model. But anyway, so the thing that I wanted to say is that, okay, if you want to have some Noramoramon charge, people what they try to do is to have Noramoramon charge, constant Noramoramon charge in the compact space, and you want to have some system which has broken supersymmetry. You take this, they took this brain and this orientifold. You take anti-brain and this orientifold, or this one and this one. And then you get always some positive Nivishwat that four. Okay. So just this is the introduction. So now
you get no tachyons.
That way you get no tachyons. Okay. But you get Nivishwat that four. And this is this is the work of. First Sugimoto, and then there were paper Ignatius, Dudas, and Yotti, and then Uranga was here. And then these models also that Luis presented are based on this kind of construction. So we don't want this because we want to be able to do some computation, one-loop computation. And we don't want to have a three-level Nivishwat statball because then we have divergences. So what kind of thing you have to do to modify. So I told you that we started with this orbifold. You have the scalar field, but there are some even and odd. So the odd are projected, except for the Kaluzak line, which are n different from zero. Otherwise, this is zero. Yeah, this is very simple.
Sorry, what is this scalar field? What is it?
I'm just any scalar field in the bar. I mean, in the bar. Then we have fermions in the bar. I'm trying to describe the theory on this picture I presented, which is the S1 over Z2. So I'm describing this bulk. The content of the bar. Now,
the graviton
and gravitino. So we think about the scalar as the graviton and the fermion as the gravitino.
What do you do with the regular dimensions?
Okay, let me go slowly. Okay. So you have periodic fermions. You can choose. Fermions to be periodic, and then you get in the situation that I described before. The other possibility, the one we will use, is to do a Schwarz mechanism, which says we use anti-periodic fermions. Okay. And these anti-periodic fermions, so instead of having n over r as a mass, you have a shift by 1 over 2r. Okay. Now, if you look in the bulk, what happens to supersymmetry? Then between the scalar and the fermion, there is this supersymmetry transformation with this supersymmetry parameter, this spinor that I described before, that you can decompose in two parts, an even and an odd. And you see, as I choose the scalar to be even, this, after doing a supersymmetry transformation, it should this remains even. So this has to be even or odd part. Okay. As a result, you can determine what is the how the parameter of the spectrum transformation varies in the bulk, and you see that the supersymmetry transformation now it's the sum of the two, where you have this even supersymmetry is realized on one boundary, and on the other boundary you have the odd supersymmetry which is realized. So you had two supersymmetries, even and odd, but now with the Schwarz, you have one realized on one boundary, one realized on the other boundary. This means that with this construction, with the oriented faults that I was describing, there is one oriented fault on one boundary and the anti-oriented fault on the other boundary. So let me put it in words here. So let me just take this oriented fault which have negative tension. I want to work with just oriented faults with negative tension so that when I add brains, I can keep the cosmological constant at three level zero. Then the first one where you take the fermions periodic was the one which people usually construct. You get the same oriented fault at the two boundaries. And if you had just one deep brains, you had the usual known type 1 orbit oriented faults. But in the second case, you see you had different supersymmetries, which means you have different the oriented fault on one side and anti-oriented fault on the other side. And you have to add, you can add pairs of D bar brain to compensate for the tensions of these oriented faults, and you can construct a non-supersymmetric vacuum with no Neuver-Schwarz tadpole. So to get a non-supersymmetric vacuum with Neuver-Schwarz tadpole, what you can do is to put so you have this choice, either to put oriented faults and deep brain on top and the anti-brain on top of the anti-oriented fault. Here the massless level is supersymmetric. This is just the usual Schwarz. Or you can switch the position of the brain and anti-brain between the two boundaries, and then you get here a non-supersymmetric brain world volume. And they have no Neuver-Schwarz tadpole. So the construction summarized here, what I told you. So this is the Sugimoto model and what is derived from it. This is the type 1, the usual model with oriented fold and deep brain on top. Then you do the Schwarz mechanism. So that transforms this oriented fold and the brain into anti-oriented fold and anti-brain. And then if you want to have the brain world volume, which is non-supersymmetric, you just switch the position of the brain and the anti-brain.
Ramon that will still cancel locally?
No, locally. Not locally, but global.
But then what do you do? This is locally your system is unstable.
No problem with anomalies?
With anomalies, no. Okay. Yeah, so if you
how stabilize locally your system?
The can't move off
the they cannot move off the boundary. But
the oriented fault cannot move, but the big brains, what about big brains?
They can't move.
No,
that's
it. So you can generalize this. You can generalize this in higher dimensions, and you can have systems where you can have both situation with brain on top of oriented fold or anti-brain on top of oriented fold. you have here the mass spectrum is supersymmetric. This is supersymmetric, but this one is not supersymmetric. And you can try to build a model like this where you can use this non-supersymmetric brain world volume to study how you can mediate from a non-supersymmetric brain, supersymmetric breaking, to some supersymmetric sector. So this is the aim. However, for the time being, the only thing the point we arrive is just building this kind of model. We built some of this model, but we didn't arrive yet to the point of studying this mediation of supersymmetry. So let me describe to you what you can get as a model of this type.
Sorry, why you need this extra guy?
Which extra guy?
This extra scalar in the Balkans.
You need gravity. It's not a scalar. I just try to explain in two very simple way. I took a scalar to explain the Schwarz, how to work.
The Schwarz, yes,
yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
You don't need to introduce anything.
No, I don't introduce anything. Everything appears by itself from I start type to
well,
string theory and everything.
Yeah.
Everything
is there.
No, if you do, you start in 9 dimensions or 10 dimensions, you do S1 over Z2, and you go to 9 dimensions and build the string model. So what do you get? We parameterize the number of brain and the number of anti-brain at the point zero or the point pi r by this n bar for anti-brain. You can write the condition for no Neve-Schwarz tadpole and no Ramon tadpole. You see the anti-brain comes with a minus sign because they have Ramon charges which are opposite to the one of the brain. And then that you don't have any tachyons means that you don't put on the same point, same time brain and anti-brain. So you solve this equation, you find two solutions with 16 brains on each boundary.
Are they stable against moving off the boundary in pairs?
Yeah. The instability which can exist in this system is that everything collapses. I mean,
yeah, is it stable against the brains moving on the poles?
Yeah. If you try to do that, you create some local tadpole for the dilaton. You have a strong coupling regime, so you cannot compute. You try to move this. Sorry?
Don't the charges suggest that
between these two configurations, this one has the lowest vacuum energy at one loop. This is what you get.
So it's not stable.
So B is preferred to C at one loop. Okay, but this for me, I'm happy to study. What I want to study is even if it's unstable, but in perturbation theory you can study the theory on this wall. That you can do. There is no problem. I mean, there are atoms which are unstable, but the you can study the electron in the electromagnetic field with QED. So. There is no problem for that. And what I want to study for the time being, I try to get some system with a non-supersymmetric brain and try to learn something about this non-supersymmetric brain. My aim is not to derive the real world, just so simply. So the two model, what we call B and C, what you have, the content on the brains is SO16 cross SO16, which is in supersymmetric representation. This is just the massless level. At the massive level, you will find that they are not supersymmetric multiplets. Even the winding modes are not supersymmetric multiplets. But at the massless level, you have supersymmetric multiplets. This is the Schwarz. I told you there is one supersymmetry which is preserved on one side and one supersymmetry preserved on the other side. So there are adjoint representation of SO16. While
is that related somewhat to this loss of symmetry that could be heterotic models?
There are some conjectures that it has it can be dual, but I don't know for how much I would trust that. The other model is where you exchange the position of brain onto brain. What you find is that the vector is in the adjoint, while the spinor is in the symmetric representation. Now the symmetric representation is not irreducible; it has a singlet. And this singlet is a Goldstein of a nonlinear supersymmetry. So I think I can explain this now at this point, and then looking at this picture, what I told you is that you have the orientable, the brick explicitly supersymmetry, they appear only on the boundaries, where already the orbifold is breaking the supersymmetry, okay? But the brain breaks spontaneously. The supersymmetry which is broken spontaneously is still nonlinearly realized. When you put it on this orientifold projection projects away this the Goldstein. However, and it's the same here. However, when you switch this position of the brain and the anti-brain, you see that this orientifold preserve exactly the nonlinear supersymmetry which is present on these anti-brains. So the Goldstein remains is not projected, and you find some nonlinear supersymmetry which is realized on this system. Okay. So I can just show you that the spectrum, when you go to 6 dimension and to 4 dimensions, quickly, main aspects of the spectrum, and then discuss some applications of this.
So how many Goldsteiners do you have?
How many Goldsteiners?
Yeah.
It's n equal 4. So how do you want to count them?
Because you're bringing all the supersymmetries that you had originally, right? Down to 0.
Yes.
So all of them should have Goldsteiners, right?
Yes, half are here, half are here. So what happens if you go to T4 over Z2, 6 dimension, I skip details, just to show you what happens. The interesting thing is that here you introduce some 9 brains in the bulk, and 5 brains in on the boundary. So we have this is the model where it's just Schack-Schwarz. This is supersymmetric on the boundary. And then I told you the Schack-Schwarz transforms one chirality to the other one when you go from one boundary to the other one. So I represented here the on the boundary y equal to 0, and here on the boundary y equal to pi r, how the chirality flips. And here there is the supersymmetric multiplex representation. Even if supersymmetry is broken, it's totally broken here. Now, when you do this interchange of anti-brain and brain position, what you get is that this object, the DD, change place. It goes. This one goes from here to here, and this one. So. Chain flips the position, but the end string remains the same. Supersymmetric multiple. Okay.
I'm confused a little bit because you said half of the Goldsteiners are on one boundary and another half is on the other boundary.
Yes.
So those come from this orientifold.
They come from the brain. They don't come from the orientifold.
Now, if I remove those brains, you still get Schack-Schwarz breaking without those brains.
Yes, yes.
So there are some Goldsteiners coming from that break.
Yes.
So it cannot be the host. So how? But then the number should be. If you have
these Goldsteiners that are on the boundaries are not going to be absorbed by the gravitino. The gravitino has.
The number of Goldsteiners should be equal to number of supercharges you had initially. Period.
No, it's not like that. No. It's like if you take the Higgs standard model, you add another Higgs, and you break you break it twice. I mean, with two different Higgses.
Then I have one number of Goldstones is the same as number of generators, right?
Look, just take this. I have to explain to you. Just take this system, okay? This system, okay, with a Schwarzschild. This is not supersymmetric.
Yeah.
You agree?
Sure.
The gravitino has a mass. You agree?
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
It has absorbed the Goldstino in the back, okay?
But that's a separate story, I'm saying.
Here it's the same system. There is nothing we changed in the back, okay? But you have some new state, new Goldstino related to this global supersymmetry on the brain.
My question just was how many Goldstinos you have. I mean, all of them should be not. You agree the number of Goldstinos that are absorbed at the end by gravitino should be equal to number of supercharges.
Yeah. Yes, those which are, of course, those are already absorbed here on this picture. Already they are absorbed by the gravitino, which is massive.
He's talking. Yeah, more gravitino do you have?
Gravitino is n equal 8. So it's 32 supercharges in the bulk.
Yeah, that is the number of your Goldstinos that you can absorb, right? How can you have more Goldstinos? What confuses me is if by your count you get more Goldstinos, extra ones.
You get extra ones on the boundaries which are not absorbed by the gravity.
I mean,
these are like almost Goldstinos. You have some orange preserving some
Goldstinos.
And then you put the brain, and locally you break some of the supercharges.
At three level, these are Goldstein. They have.
There's a very well defined definition of Higgs mechanism. If you had two Higgs, they didn't interact.
Right.
Except that they were charged under the same gate symmetry.
Right. I have one Goldstein.
And in that limit, you would, in a sense, you would have an extra massless particle. Because it's not natural for them to be completely in two different
systems. Right, but it would not be a Goldstone of the same symmetry, right?
But I think there's an almost, these things mix and turn into almost Goldstone.
Okay. So. So this is the spectrum in six dimension. If you do T4 over Z2, you get this gauge group. From nine brain, you get U16.
How are you getting down to six on tools? How are you compacting down to six at
tools? T4 over Z2, this is what I was saying. T4 over Z2. So you get this kind of representation. And here the Goldstino will be in the 64. It's the the fermion. It's not the gaugeino because it has the wrong chirality. But the fermion going with the adjoint representation of the U1, the overall U1 of the brains on the boundary.
Sorry, where did this U8 come from? U8 class U8.
These are the five brains. Also. Now I go to six dimension. I compactify on T4 over Z2.
Yeah.
So I would have nine brain in the back and five brains on the boundary. The nine brain gives you U16, and the five brains gives you U8 cross U8. So this is what you get without much work on the six dimensions. And you can go to four dimensions and very easily construct some chiral model. I mean, without much effort, you just can do a T6 over Z prime 6, where you had the Z2 that I used in six dimension to go from T4 to on T4 over Z2, and then you act again with a Z3. And you have the Schwarz on one of the two directions of this third plane. Okay? And just want to present the spectrum. So just to give you an idea what kind of models you can easily generate with this construction. Okay? So there is still a 5-bar, a 9-brain, and then a 5. I just present the 5-bar and the 9 brain spectrum. So you get some patisalam with two families. So it's U2 cross U2 cross U4. And you can create some third family by doing some kind of breaking of U4 from the 5 brain with a U4 from the 9 brain to some thing in the diagonal, as Gary Shu was doing in one of his papers. So you can create a 3-family patisalam this way without much effort.
Can you break U4 down? Do you have the logic to break it down to U3 color?
I didn't look what is the... I didn't try to build this more of phenomenology of these. The spectrum of what you get is here. You have a Higgs tablet, the usual Higgs tablet.
Sorry.
You have tens.
Maybe you said this before. This is non-supersymmetric?
This is non-supersymmetric. It's non-supersymmetric.
So this is occurring at what scale?
The string scale. So you choose the string scale where you want. You want to put it at TV. It's TV. So this is a presentation of the models. I would like to spend the rest of the time with some applications. The first one is with this nonlinear supersymmetry. So let me remind you that when you have nonlinear supersymmetry, you have this Goldsteiner field. I did not buy this symbol key, which has some nonlinear transformation. Xi alpha is the parameter of supersymmetric transformation. So the you can ask what is the scale of supersymmetry breaking. There is a scale which is the what you can call the scale of supersymmetry breaking, which is the decay constant of the Goldsteiner. Is this scale here? For if you had the breaking with F term or D term, then for F term this will be 2 times F, and for D term is the D. So we would like to compute it for these models to know what it is equal. And you can compute it by remembering that there is an interaction of the Goldsteiner with fermions, two Goldsteiner, two fermions. And that is the interaction is governed by this Lagrangian. There is this scale, the decay constant of the Goldsteiner appears here as a coefficient. And then there is another, there are two unknowns here. There is this scale, I call it V, so V4. And there is another unknown, which is some coefficient, which I think this is just T mu, while this term, I think, was discovered in the 90s by Brignole, Ferruglio, and Zwirner. And it was missed before, as far as I know. And it was a problem that from the effective field theory, people don't know what kind of value this CF can take, okay? So how to compute this? You just have to compute the interaction of two Goldsteiners with two matter fermions. So just string scattering. And this you identify on shell with what you expect from this Lagrangian, the field theory, and you can read this two unknowns. So we did that. I skipped the details computation, but anyway, you can write the vertex operator for this states. And for the Goldsteiner, the thing I just want to say it's a singlet, so it's proportional to the identity. And then you have to normalize it with volume compactified of the p-brain and the number of p-brains. And then you do the computation, what you find. as a result that this V4 over 2 is given by the scale of breaking is given by the tension of the brain. So you can compute it explicitly. It appears with all the numbers exactly the tension of the brain. Why this coefficient? You find that it's non-universal, that it takes different values depending on the internal chirality of the fermion compared to the one of the Goldstein. So, I mean, this you cannot compute in the effective filter, but string theory you can compute it explicitly. We did it and we found different values. So, and it was unknown if it from an effective filter if it has always one value or what it is. So this is one application. Okay, so I skip details on this. Then I go to the computation of one loop scalar masses. So on this brain, take this brain on the boundary. You have some open strings, which have some zero mode, massless mode, plus scalar. That you can consider the massless at three level. As it's non-supersymmetric, they are going to acquire some mass at one loop. And so we can compute what kind of mass they acquire at one loop. Okay? So this we did the computation. And the result, we computed the, for some of them, you can compute explicitly the effective potential. They are the Wilson lines. So we compute the dependence of the effective potential on these Wilson lines. It's given by this integral. So computed explicitly for this model of a brain on anti-orientifold. And I am going to explain to you in the rest of the talk what means this formula from an effective field theory point of view, how you derive it, okay? So just bear with me. From there is a dependence on the radius, the separation, so the radius of either, which is a transverse radius, separation of the brain, or if you take a D4 brain or D5 brain, the radius of compactification. That's this R here, the dependence appears here. So if the radius is big, means you have a D4 or D5 brains. So this is longitudinal radius. So if it's big, then in this integral, we find that only the infrared region contributes, and then you get an effective filter result that I will describe in detail. While if it's small, then you go to the case where this is a radius in the transverse direction to the brain. Then it's the oscillators, the string oscillators, which contribute, and you find some mass which is governed by the string scale. So the cutoff is at the string scale, as you can expect. So, and you can write this formula that you see it, that the mass of the scalar is governed by the Young-Mills couplings times some parameter times the string scale, and you can plot this parameter, and you will see that this parameter takes you from varies something like this. And this region is governed by the string physics, the UV physics. This is the radius. This is 1. So if the radius is smaller than 1, you could realize it's transverse to the brain. It's the string physics which governs this. While for a radius which is big, then it's the effective filter which governs this. And you can compute it explicitly and you find this goes like 1 over R. So let's go to this region where it's the effective field theory which governs it and discuss this region. The importance of this is that we would like to apply it for the Higgs of the standard model. So the Higgs of the standard model at one loop, if you just have a non-supersymmetry, you get quadratic divergences. So, which are well known, the problem of hierarchy. So, you can try to solve them by putting the UV cutoff of MW, so the TV scale quantum gravity, as IDB proposed. And you get something, then there is no problem with Hayek, but if it's dependent on the UV, then you cannot compute anything, cannot say anything quantitative about this one-loop result. And the question is, are there cases where you can compute this one loop and get a result which is dominated by the effective field theory, so that you can say quantitatively this is of some order of magnitude. This is what you can do with supersymmetry, but in this case, is there some case you can do it? So I can tell you when you can do it. So some.
What are these? Are they deep brain moduli? What are they?
Any scalar on the deep brain. This open string. Open string on deep brain. So now I can give you some kind of theorem, general, when this is finite.
So you mean matter of charged, those that are the charged?
Oh,
you don't have supersymmetry, so.
Sorry. This is this. It's non-supersymmetric. The model is non-supersymmetric. Let me state this, and you. I think you can you will understand. Take a scalar phi living on the brain. Take the spectrum of particles on this brain, which depend on the wave of phi. Okay, of this form. Take it of this form. So there is a mass in higher dimension, which is created when phi gets a wave, and then there is some masses which disappear when the radius goes to infinity, which are governed by the wave of phi. Okay? Then, with spectrum of this form, you can compute the one-loop effective potential and see the result when it's finite. So, when it's governed by effective filter. So what you find is that if you have a longitudinal radius, if you have these shifts, the case that we consider with the phi is with some light. So if you have these shifts to be independent on an I, so it's a constant shift, and if the higher dimensional mass, so this term is constant or independent of phi, or if you recover some supersymmetry in the limit r goes to infinity, then the result will be finite, just governed by the effective field theory. So I want to show you the one loop effective potential. So the proof for this, if you want to see the proof. So the one loop effective potential is given by this formula that you know very well. And just go to the Schwinger representation, rewrite it in the Schwinger representation, this one loop effective potential. Okay.
What are you proving, that if I take supersymmetry breaking scale to zero?
I'm proving that. I'm proving that there are cases where you can compute the one loop, the one loop mass for the scalar field phi. Just in effective field theory, it doesn't depend on the UV completion of your theory.
Because 1/r is the scale of supersymmetry breaking.
No. 1/r is not the scale. I told you it was the deep brain is non supersymmetric. It's broken at the string scale supersymmetry.
So, you can take R to infinity. Don't you restore supersymmetry?
No. I have D4 brain. Sorry.
I think isn't this an analog? You know, you have the supersymmetry breaking is not local, right?
Exactly.
So, the point is.
No. Let me. I just consider brain. Consider a non-Suzy brain. Non-Suzy brain, okay? And you have a scalar field.
No, wait a minute. So what I don't understand...
General.
I understand conditions of the theorem, but what I don't understand is that in your construction, okay, you have half of the supercharge is broken on this brain, another half broken on this brain. There is no a single local point at which you break all
the supercharges.
Right?
All the supersymmetries are broken on each boundary.
Each boundary is broken, all the supersymmetries
on the brain.
On each boundary.
Yeah, all
here
of them.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah, half are non-linear realized, non-linear realization, they are broken.
Yeah. Yes, okay, so, because I thought your order parameter was 1 over R.
No.
So where do you scale?
Let me work in...
On the brain. On the brain.
Yet, where Suzy is fully broken and yet they are UV, their masses are UV insensitive.
Not only insensitive, zero insensitive.
No, unsensitive. No. The mass.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Unsensitive.
But why?
Sorry.
Why?
Just if you have this. Let me. Maybe I can. Let me tell you. If you can put it on this form, under the condition I told you, which like this is independent of phi, then you can always define some gauge symmetry and identify some phi with the Wilson line. So there will be higher gauge symmetry in higher dimension, which protects you from getting a mass.
That's an additional assumption. I don't understand.
What?
So this is like
this is the assumption which is contained in this form of the
the
mass.
You are assuming that so phi is a component of the gauge of the extra dimension. That is correct. Yes. In that case, you don't even need supersymmetry.
Yes.
Yeah,
but I didn't say I need supersymmetry.
Right, that's known. I agree with that. Yeah.
I say it's just the form of the at one loop is just a form of this mass dependence. You do something as complicated as you want with some phi as complicated that you want. You get something like this. You can compute it and you can see it. It's one page.
You get symmetry.
Exactly. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah.
Okay, that's known for the torus. Now, for the orbifold, it's more complicated. But anyway, that was the result. So the proof for, if there's somebody who wants to see the proof, I can show the proof. Otherwise, I just skip it.
Maybe you should just go ahead. Yeah.
So anyway, the thing is that the effective potential is contains we can be written on this form where you have the two parts which depend on phi, the shift appears here, and the mass, higher dimensional mass appears here, and you can look, UV sensitivity comes from the region, the UV region of the effective potential is when you take L goes to infinity. And you see, when you take L goes to infinity, you have for big radius, you have this exponentially damped. So there will be no contribution for mi equals zero, different from zero. Only mi equals zero, which will not depend on this. And the only thing which will contribute is from this mass in the higher dimension. So, and this contribution is just the divergence which was present in the higher dimensional theory. So if you have a reason that there was no divergence in the higher dimensional theory, then there will be no UV divergence, there will be no UV sensitivity. Okay, that's...
What is the mass proportion of 2?
1 over R. The mass you get is proportional to 1 over R. So the way to the realization, the simplest realization of this mechanism is by using this phi as a component, internal component of a gauge field, okay? As you were saying.
Look, I don't understand it. Sorry for interruption, but
please.
There is one case when it's true and you don't need string theory for that. In effective field theory, if you have, whenever you tell me that the scalar field is a partner of the gauge field, in extra dimensions,
yes, this is
which lives in the bulk, Okay. Then, yeah, the gangster is about gauge 2. If I take...
Okay, it's, it lives in higher dimension.
The dimension that makes the mass finite. And yes, this is what I'm... Any mass that can come from for this scalar should be proportional to the 1 over R, because that's what is the scalar brain.
Yes, this is what...
You said this is a scalar which lives on the brain.
Yeah, but it's a brain which has some other extra dimensions.
So you are assuming the extra dimensions compactified.
Yeah, on the frame.
But then the answer is proportional to the radius of those extra dimensions.
Yes, exactly.
Not to this R that you were showing distance. The answer is always proportional to the radius.
I said you have. I said that you take a D 3 plus
right.
D brain.
Yes. Sure. And compactified those on R.
Yeah, these have a radius R I. If
okay,
Ri
yes.
is bigger than
one,
then it goes 1 over R. Okay. Right. So this is the idea that the thing I want to tell you is that the idea is that when you have some form of the mass, which is the form I showed, you can always rewrite it like if it's a Wilson line. There is some component of a gauge field, and then this gauge symmetry in higher dimension protects you from creating a mass which is proportional to the string scale. You create a mass which is proportional to 1 over R. So this is, and then on tori, this is something which was known since Hosotani. So that's not. And the problem is on orbifold. Because tori don't give you a chiral. On orbifold, you can get divergences from twisted states. So it works only if this twisted state don't give any UV divergences, okay? And because the twisted states don't have any, they have exactly this. They contribute to this mass. In this mass formula, they contribute. They don't have Kaluza-Klein state, so they don't contribute here. They contribute here. So you have to have them in supersymmetric multiplet. And in these models that I presented, like the D5 brain in six dimension, I told you they were this DN string. They have these states which are in supersymmetric representation. Supersymmetric multiplets, these ones. Yeah. So this is not something which is absolutely crazy. You get this kind of model. So you can get some models where you can compute. So you can compute this effective potential. So this idea has been used by many people. I think you had already a talk by Andy Cohen, who was using exactly this, but in a way which was with this deconstruction. So, but it's the idea of having. We try to see how it would work if you will try to use it in a realistic model, and it doesn't work in a beautiful way. There are a lot of problems you find if you try to do it. I think my time is nearly over. I don't know if I can, if there is something, some question on that I can answer. Otherwise, I can just tell you that the problems you find. The problem you find is that the Higgs being as a component of a gauge boson will always have your color coupling given by the gauge coupling. So you can get the model which we constructed a model which is like a standard model, just from U3 cross U3 and all befolding. You can construct a very nice model which has exactly the content of the standard model where this works, but the problem is the Yukawa coupling. Yukawa coupling are, they are governed by the gauge coupling, so you have to introduce some extra physics on the boundaries to generate the Yukawa couplings, which can generate fermion masses which are realistic. And this nobody did. So, and on orbital there are a lot of subtle things which appear when you try to compute this this Higgs mass. But I don't have time to show them. I just want to, I think, show you the conclusion of my talk. I find it. Or I can just tell you the conclusion. So what I try to present here was some non-supersymmetric string model which we built. So we built non-supersymmetric string model where it's on orbital, where you can compute things. So I explained to you how you get non-supersymmetric models. You can get something which are like Patti-Salam gauge groups, which are, I mean, which are not exotic. Okay. And you can do some computation because it's orbifold, flat orbifold. You can do some string computation. And I showed you two applications. One was nonlinear supersymmetry, where you can compute some parameters of the nonlinear supersymmetry transformation. And the other one that you can compute some one-loop effective potential for the scalars, and that you can understand this from the effective field theory, that you can reproduce the effective field theory result. Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Sorry, what is, I think I misunderstood, what are these twisted circles you're talking about? They're working with open strings, you don't get...
DN strings, you know, they are like Z2, the DN strings. Strings which are between intersecting brains.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just call them twisted because from the brain world volume, people call them twisted. I just